Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
Australian Ashley Watson is an independent retro soul singer and songwriter. From first performing in her school years and joining the renowned girl band Sweethearts at 14, she developed a passion for Motown and soul. She remained with the band until 22, making notable contributions under the direction of Ross Lipson. With Sweethearts, Ashley performed at top international festivals such as Porretta Soul Festival in Italy and Montreux Jazz Festival in Switzerland, and mentored the band's vocal sections. She has also performed and collaborated with acts like All Star, Bamboozle, and The New Originals. Ashley was a session vocalist on The Voice Australia and X Factor, and her single Little Love featured in ABC TV's Harrow. Ashley has achieved a career milestone by collaborating with award-winning singer-songwriter, multi-instrumentalist, composer and producer Michael Cristiano. Her debut album Huntress will be released in 2026, and the first single from the album Charlie Brown is released in 2025. Up next on Celeb Savant, we've got Ashley Watson.
Where in the world are you and how are you doing?
Thank you very much. I'm doing very well. I'm coming to you live from my lounge room in Melbourne, Victoria, Australia.
At what age, whether as a child or teenager, did you feel cool? I want to be in the creative process. I want to be in the music world. And how did that journey progress?
Honestly, I've known since birth. I know that sounds wild, but I never wanted to do anything else. The only reason I thought maybe this isn't a normal career path is because kids at school would sort of poke fun at it and or say, oh, it's never going to happen, you know, as a pipe dream sort of thing. But I honestly never recall wanting to be anything else except for my love of animals. I recall maybe when I was about six thinking I might want to be a singing vet, so therefore I could still look after the animals and do singing, but I don't deal with blood well, so that didn't come to fruition, unfortunately. With regards to actually pursuing it, my mum put me in singing and dancing at the Johnny Young Talent School straight away since I was six. So it's really been since then I've been pursuing it.
And when the kids at school said those comments like, oh, it's not going to happen, it's a pipe dream, did you ever let that get into your brain or did you just say, no, that's their perception?
I think over time, it probably does get into your head a little bit because you start to think yourself, oh yeah, that does seem really hard or impossible to achieve, because it's sort of a societal belief, I think, that people generally think that celebrities sort of aren't human. They have this superhuman vibe, and that to become famous is just the luck of the draw, one in a billion type of thing, which just isn't true.
So you had started doing the dancing and singing lessons. What were the next steps and then to becoming, allowing it to become professional?
When I was 13, 14, I auditioned for Sweethearts, which is a Motown soul all-girl band in Geelong, Australia. And that's when it started to become professional as I started gigging at that time. So anything before then was really just lessons, improving my craft. And from 14 onward, it became like a legitimate career.
What was it like to be part of that band? You had this perception of doing this as your professional career, then you joined the Sweethearts. Were there any aspects of it that you were surprised about that you thought, okay, well, I didn't realize this would be part of it? And the nuances of the different relationships between the people in the band. How did all of that go?
Honestly, it was some of the best experiences in my life. I'm a girl's girl. It was an all-girls school I went to. And so honestly, I made friends for life. So with regard to relationships in the band, I know that this is probably not this everyone's experience, but I had the best time. And thanks to Ross, who was the musical director and creator of Sweethearts at the time, you know, we weren't sort of allowed to muck around. We all had to be professionals, even though we were kids essentially, and make it work, put differences aside. And we did. And we got to play some fantastic festivals overseas. You know, kids that age, you don't get to do that. So you are very grateful.
And how long were you in Sweethearts for?
From 14 until about 22. So most girls will graduate and then leave the band. That's sort of how things work. But because Rossway mentioned earlier and I were quite close, he's passed away now, he kept me on as a mentor for the backing singers and lead vocalists until, yeah, I was 22. So a long time.
What does it mean to be a mentor?
Well, in that particular case, it was involved things like helping the backing singers discover harmonies, perhaps creating choreography for the songs. And from a specific mentorial perspective, I'd say, particularly to the lead vocalists, was just giving them general advice and confidence, because you were in their shoes when you were 14, and letting them know that they can do it, and any fear that they're having and all that sort of stuff is normal.
And is the Sweethearts, is it still carried on?
They are, 30 plus years, yes. They recently performed at my birthday party, which was a fantastic full circle moment to actually hire them myself after being part of the band for so long. But yes, they're doing great, great things.
Okay, now let's dive into your solo journey, your solo career. So you left the Sweethearts, and how did then the solo part of your career move forward? What are the next steps?
I actually studied Cert 4 in jazz right after high school, which is sort of what led me into creating jazz tracks of my own when I did start writing. And I think it was at that time I sort of recognized that I really did have a deep passion for jazz. Sweethearts is a Motown soul band, so it was heavily soul focused. And once I got into the jazz side of things, I realized how much I really loved that as well. And as we know, you know, jazz really gave birth to soul. That's how it works anyway. So they're very closely related. And I met some people during that course, including some of the fellow students and teachers, who we then just either got into their band that they already had as their lead singer, or we created our own. And in fact, you know, I was about 19 at that time. Some of them I still play with even now, and 35 currently. So yeah, friendships for life. And that's how things sort of progressed in my adulthood in terms of gigging with those guys.
How do you create a song?
Creating a song, I think, being that I love English and literature, and I, as a child, used to write poetry, which I guess is sort of formed into lyrics. I think that I usually would now come up with a chorus or a hook that's catchy, and then I flesh out a song from there in terms of the verse. And perhaps, like, when I think of a chorus, a hook, I can also hear how it'll go. And so I'll just make a little voice note on my phone, jot the lyrics down, and then I use GarageBand actually on my computer to put it together, because I don't work heavily with reading or writing music. It just doesn't stay in my brain. I'm more of a visual and oral learner.
So you have currently been collaborating with Michael Cusciano for your latest projects. Tell us about how that collaboration came to be, how you met, and more about the project.
Yes, it was such a fun time we had. We've been gigging together at another event for nearly a decade now. So I've known him for quite a long time. And he heard that I wanted to release the debut album, and he offered to come on board. And I'm so glad that he did, because I think we work very well together. We just understand each other. I get his vision, he gets mine. And, you know, because he plays a lot of instruments as well, and of course, we collaborated on the tracks, and then he put down the instrumental parts and produced it. It was such an easy process. So I really hope that we will continue to work together.
And so you referenced the debut album. Why did it take you so long to create a body of work to release as an album?
That's a fantastic question. There were a few hiccups along the way, and that happens to a lot of artists. When you get involved with people who don't have the best intentions, and unfortunately that did happen to me, but that's where Michael was great, in that, you know, being a friend, he knew about this situation and he offered to help, which he did. And that's why the process has taken so long. However, I'm kind of glad it did, because this album has really different tracks on it. And I would say every song is about love, but they're also different from one another. And that's because they were written at really different stages throughout my life and different relationships I was experiencing. So it's kind of made for a really interesting album, to be honest.
I love me a CD. I love the journey of the choice, the unpacking, the booklet, the thank yous, the listening to song from one to whatever number. I'm not sure if you're aware, you may or may not be, that massive uptick of physical around the world. A couple of years ago in the UK, 5.9 million vinyl sold, the biggest since 1990. Also last year in the UK, there's a basket of products that they gauge exchanges on. And there needs to be a high number of exchanges daily for a specific product to be in the basket. And they somehow gauge it for some other tax purposes. And because of the upsurge of CDs again, CDs have now been re-added to the basket. The research is showing that it's the teenagers, the younger kids diving into this world, not necessarily the older nostalgic people, inverted commas. We've also got streaming platforms that people consume music on. What is your observation of the landscape at the moment?
I mean, experiencing this for the first time, really, and doing my first album, it really has been a rude awakening, so to speak, with the social media being what it is and everything being digital. However, I'm not surprised that younger people are interested in CDs. I get that they're kind of cool. They're kind of retro, if we want to call it that. And to be honest, I would like to make some CDs of my own once the album is out in 2026, and even some vinyl, because as we know, everything old is new again, and that really works given that my style is quote-unquote retro soul. So I would definitely be creating some vinyls if I can.
What's coming up for the next period of time?
My debut album, Huntress, as in the female version of a hunter, will be released in 2026, and I'll have a couple of singles from the album coming out in 2025. So at the moment, I'm focusing on getting those out, which I'm very excited because, as we said before, it's been a long time coming. And I'm really excited to see what people think, because I'm not sure people know that I'm a singer, but I'm really excited for them to hear that side of me in depth.
What do you enjoy about performing live?
You know, it's always been a task, I guess, for me when I'm on stage. I want to have the whole room really enthralled with my singing. And I set myself this task when I start singing, perhaps, you know, say a really moody ballad, that if there's people chitty-chatting in the corner, that by the time I'm halfway through the song, they're going to be paying full attention. And it's that, I guess it's a bit of a power play probably, because can you emotionally captivate these people enough that they'll actually stop talking? And if you can do that, then, yeah, there is an amazing power in having such a presence on stage. And, of course, then there's the side of it of seeing people have fun and put a smile on their face, or perhaps even singing along with your lyrics. There's no better feeling than that.
I'm a dude that's right up in front. I'm dancing, I'm jamming. I'll take my cell phone out for maybe one or two songs, one or two videos, and then I put it away. You reference the people chatting in the back. But now you also have these people that are posting, they're tweeting, they're videoing, they're photographing for a lot of time of the show. As the artist on stage, seeing potentially a bunch of phones in your face compared to eyes, do you feel that takes away from the moment, from the energy, from the interaction, or it's just where society is at this time?
I mean, it doesn't bother me because I guess, you know, we want to have our music shared, seen more, so that obviously helps. However, there is a different feeling, for example, like when I play a jazz club and it's dead quiet, it's really small, and you can see the people's faces, that there is a great feeling of pressure, actually, to perform and perform well, because they're listening to every breath, every note. And I think that if someone was holding a phone in front of their face, you would disconnect. Thankfully, it hasn't happened to me too much, but I feel like imagining it, you would sort of disconnect from them because you aren't able to make that eye contact. Mm.
You referenced lyrics and the different elements earlier. I'm not sure if you're aware of NLP. Now, NLP is neuro-linguistic programming. So that's the way people process information. Now, there's a subsection within NLP called processing skills. Each of us have a dominant one, a secondary, and a tertiary. Dominant means we'll be in it most of the day. Secondary, maybe a couple of hours, and tertiary, maybe half an hour, if at all. Something kicks into each of us as a child at that moment, allows us to say, okay, well, this is our dominant. Now, there are three of them. You have visual people. Now, visual people create pictures of what they're seeing. So a visual person, as I'm talking now, will be creating pictures in their mind of what they perceive the story is about. Auditory people is about the words and sentences. So an auditory person will hear the word, put the word into the sentence, understand the sentence, put the sentence into a paragraph. Kinesthetic. Now, these people process information through tone of voice, body language, energy, all those type of elements. Now, focusing specifically on music. When you're listening to music of your own or by others, are you seeing pictures? Is it about the lyrics or is it about the feeling?
That's a really tough one because I think the first two that you mentioned would be very equal firsts for me. I do think, though, like if I was listening to a song on the radio, that I do picture it and resonate particularly with lyrics. That's sort of my first and foremost. And then as the feeling, as you mentioned, would probably come last. And I think that that's how I attempt writing songs also.
And now when you listen to songs by other artists, are you able to just relax and listen to it for what it is? Or is your technical creative brain unpacking what you're hearing?
No, I'm really grateful that that doesn't affect me. I know that for some people it does. I believe even Michael might have said that he can't listen to other songs because it sort of puts you in work mode. And perhaps it is something to do with what you just said. Songs take you on a journey. So for me, it's a really cathartic experience listening to music from other artists because I can't be bothered writing in a journal, honestly. So I would rather, and I do, listen to music and express my emotions that way. And I really hope that it stays that way because I don't want music to be ruined for me. Maybe it will. The more I get down the track, I don't know me. But just to add to that, there are times where I do just need silence as well. Oftentimes, if I'm driving, I will turn the radio off. And because perhaps you'd be working in the studio all day, and given that your job is noise, you just need quiet.
I love this game. I know if I had to ask you this question in 2 years, 5 minutes, 5 hours, I know your answer will be different every time. I understand that and I recognize that. I'm not saying favorite. I'm saying top of mind. If you had to push play to five artists, other artists than yourself, who would those five artists be? And if you can think of a specific song of theirs or songs of theirs, what songs would you play?
Well, luckily I've come prepared because I'm a fan, Barrett. So I have listened. I'm always prepared. Okay, so number one, we've got Let Me Prove My Love to You. That's the main ingredient. It's making the rounds on TikTok at the moment. It's a song from the 70s and it's so smooth. I'm obsessed at the moment. I'm going to say number two is How Deep Is Your Love, the PJ Morton version featuring Yebba. Oh, I mean, I love the Bee Gees, but that is such a soulful version. I love it. I'm a massive Kylie fan, so number three for me is going to be Red Blooded Woman by Kylie Minogue. If you know, you know. Number four is going to be Golden Hour by Jake, and I love listening to it at this time of year because it reminds me of spring. It has that vibe. The next one and last one will be Give Me the Night by George Benson, because as soon as it starts, I mean, you just want to dance.
So the podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a final message, what would you like to say?
I would like to say that I really hope that everyone can have a listen to my album, Huntress, when it drops in 2026, and that you can find me at my website, ashleywatsonmusic.com. That's Ashley spelled A-S-H-L-E-I-G-H, watsonmusic.com. And let us know what you think of the tracks.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.